This is the Best of Golic and Wingo podcast.
All eyes for the last several days have been waiting for a report that we knew was coming from the Washington Post regarding something from the Washington football team. That post came out yesterday, and in many ways, it's as daunting as everybody could have imagined. Golic and Wingo on ESPN Radio, ESPN 2, Sirius XM Channel 80, and your smart speakers. I'm Jason Fitz in for Trey Wingo, sitting with Mike Golic, Mike Golic Jr. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests join us on the Shell Penzo Performance Line, and I think our tone as we start the show is more somber than it usually is for a reason, because we start with, gentlemen, a very heavy topic, as the Washington Post has put out an article that goes into stories of 15 women that are alleging sexual misconduct by former Washington football team employees. It should be noted that Dan Snyder is not specifically listed in any of these reports, but the reports do speak to the culture that has been created within that football club and within the organization, and how business was being done every day. And when you read it, it's just generally horrifying.
Well, I mean, again, we were all waiting for this article to come out, and wild speculation of what you were going to read in this and find out in this. But according to the Washington Post, they had five takeaways from this, and we'll get into some of the specifics. The team environment tolerated frequent sexual harassment, verbal abuse of female employees. Washington's NFL team didn't have the proper structure to handle harassment complaints. Dan Snyder, while, as Jason said, was not mentioned in this, belittled executives helping to create an uncomfortable workplace for everyone. The team has hired an outside attorney to study the franchise culture. And the three, we've mentioned these three before, Alex Santos, Richard Mann II, and Larry Michael, all left the team after complaints were raised. So those are the takeaways against a culture in this. You know, we went through this with the Dallas Mavericks and the culture in that situation in that franchise. And now you go through it here. I mean, you know, you read it, and it's like, it always amazes me at the just the patheticness of men and their low self-esteem, that they think they need to dominate over women in the ways that you read about. It's pathetic. They're pathetic. They're pathetic human beings for doing things like that, that you read about, that they say, oh yes, I'm dominant over a woman. Hey, congratulations. You're an idiot. You know, you're worse, but I get beeped out for saying what you really are. It just blows my mind. It's still not only is done by a few, as we will get into some of the specifics, but the culture that is created, you know, for that franchise was just an awful culture. And a lot we'll go into today is how culpable is Daniel Snyder in all of this.
Yeah, and I think the thing is, we're going to all sit up here and rightly blast Washington for their culture and a lot of this, but the reaction that you heard around from a lot of people in a lot of places is, for the women that work in sports, this isn't all that dissimilar from what a lot of them have to deal with in a lot of different outlets and a lot of different locations. And so while Washington will come under fire, because it is a lot, like, culture is what you empower the people in power to do. And when you go down the list and you read senior vice president of content, club's pro personnel director, assistant director of pro personnel, former president of business operations, former chief operating officer, as the people with accusations levied at them, you look at them and go, huh, that's a lot of men in positions of power that are going to control the potential upward mobility of a lot of the women in question here. That's where, again, this is the inequity in the system that women are constantly pointing out, that we've seen and echoed in the recent months, that people of color have pointed out. Like, all of it goes back to when you allow the people with power to run roughshod with their own bigoted or sexist beliefs or the way they apply that, you get this. You get this cesspool that unfortunately makes the lives of a lot of people miserable.
With all of this, within the report, 15, as we said, women have alleged sexual misconduct. 14 of them did it anonymously. One went on the record. Of note to me in the article, the 14 that did it anonymously, many did it because when they left the organization, they had to sign a non-disclosure agreement that said they couldn't say anything about the team as a whole, anything negative moving forward. Also interesting that it is pointed out in the article that the Washington Post reached out to the team to ask the team to release them from that non-disclosure so that they could feel comfortable going on the record without any threat of recourse. And the Washington football team did not allow that to happen. I find that interesting only because as much as you people will come in and try and find fault anytime there are accusers that are anonymous, the Washington football team that is likely going to come out and give us a million apologies over the course of the next several days did not feel so strong about their apologies and doing the right thing that they allowed these women that were the victims here. They didn't allow them the freedom to speak on record. So I have to say that before we hear any apology. Emily Applegate did speak on record. She's a former employee of the team, and this is what she had to say when she talked about the culture that existed there.
I had a week maybe or so that was great. And I was like, yes, this is exactly what I wanted and what was explained to me. And this is going to be great. And then, you get your first screaming at you for something that it's not your fault. And then somebody makes a comment to you about what you're wearing and it just snowballs from there. And it really took most people no time to comment on my appearance.
By the way, that's from the Washington Post. I should allow that's from the Washington Post website.
Yeah, and I think it's what you hear in a lot of these situations, and again, Elizabeth Applegate was the one that was able to speak on record, but what you hear from a lot of these anonymous quotes, quite frankly, what you hear from women all over the world of sports that were speaking up in response to this and speaking out about how you came in and this was sort of the accepted norm, how there was usually a woman who had been on staff in a prominent position who was pulling other women aside when they would come on board and saying, here's what to expect, here's who to watch out for. That was kind of similar to the Dallas Mavericks situation and all that. Like, that it's sort of part of the onboarding in its own way for women that are coming to work at that company or at others. And it's like, the fact that that is so normalized, like, all of that should be... I want to not say the jarring part, but as jarring that, like, all right, it was accepted enough and that these people felt that there was no recourse for it. And that's the other part of this is you have not created a place where there's anywhere you can go in all this one. That trapped, helpless feeling in all this is a huge part of why.
And again, these are executives we're talking about doing things like telling the female employees to wear high skirts, to wear low-cut blouses, inappropriate hugs going on. Out there, reporters talking about their butts being pinched, asked to be date these executives. The executives saying, "Do you want to go out?" I mean, the cheerleaders doing a photo shoot in Costa Rica, and suite members having to pay extra, and you get access to their photo shoot, their bikini shoot. I mean, I just read this stuff, and I'm like, you mentioned it before. What was Mad Men, right?
Yeah.
I mean, where the hell is this? I mean, what are we doing here? And again, if you're running a corporation, a company nowadays, how does something happen more than once? I mean, how is it not dictated from the top down at the beginning? You know what's not accepted? You know, and everybody talks about your 100-page memo for COVID. You know, how about your memo when you come work at a place of what's acceptable and what's not, and how not acceptable this is, that if it happens once, that's all that's going to happen, that it shouldn't happen anymore. I mean, so you want to talk about the blank running downhill. I mean, set the tone at the top. And it obviously wasn't set.
Well, no, and when you've got no way to air out these problems. Liz Clark, the Washington Post author of the Washington Football Story, was on Spain and Company last night and talked about the lack of any real HR department with teeth here.
None of this should ever have happened twice. It should never have happened, really. But if you had had a competent, well-staffed, well-funded HR department, very vigorous, it would just take one episode of one scout saying something inappropriate or sending an appalling text, you know, to say, do this again and you're gone. But instead, this like went on and on and on. And these young women cycle through the jobs. They cry in the bathroom. You know, they wanted careers in sports. And it really quashed career dreams in some cases.
And Dad, to your point, you don't create systems to fix things that you don't care about and don't believe are problems. And that's the issue here, is none of these things were deemed problems. They were all these things that these men in the situation felt a right to. Because I am a man and you are a woman, I get to talk to you like this. And I get to sexualize every part of your job. And I get to demean you in front of our coworkers and all this stuff. And there was nobody either formally in HR or just around that building that was willing to call it out. Like, we've had all this conversation around, you know, rightly and rightly so, it's not enough to just be not racist. You've got to point out and carve out instances of it and not allow it to happen. That's the same thing that applies to this situation. Like, if you were a man in that office who lacked the gumption to, if you saw something and didn't say something, you're now culpable in this. Like, that's the reality of the situation, is that this doesn't stop until people start stopping it.
Which is something I've echoed before. When I worked at 102.5 The Game in Nashville with the Predators, we worked with an organization called MEND. MEND is huge in Nashville, and they're trying to end domestic assault and the way that women are treated improperly by men in power. And one of the things that they teach you when you first start working with the organization is that the first step towards change is not allowing the conversation to happen left to right. It's not allowing the person next to you to say the thing that's inappropriate without recourse, and holding each other to a higher standard. The fact that a culture was created from the top down within the Washington football team that didn't demand that from anybody, that allowed it to sort of fester and grow, has to lay squarely at the feet of Dan Snyder.
Golic and Wingo.
And Wingo.
Mm-hmm. Trey Wingo and Mike Golic Sr.
We're going to hop over to the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line, gentlemen, where we're joined by ESPN NFL reporter Kimberly Martin. Kimberly, we really appreciate your time and your insight. You obviously come to us knowing that you had a stint in around 2017-18 with the Washington Post covering the Washington football team. So I guess we'll start with what your experience was like culture-wise within those halls.
I'll just say I'm not at all surprised by this story, and I don't think anyone should be, given that 2 years ago we had five cheerleaders talking to the New York Times about their treatment within the organization. You know, this is, we talk about culture. This is systemic. This starts at the top on down. And when you look at, I don't know how Bruce Allen, the former team president, could say at the end of last year he thinks there's a damn good culture here, because we've seen anything but from the Redskins.
And Kimberly, to that end, we have seen in this that while Daniel Snyder is not directly implicated in any of the things alleged or the things that were brought up here, the accusations in this situation, you mentioned the culture. Just for people that may not have read the article yet, kind of help paint a picture of how Daniel Snyder really sets the tone in that building and the way that he acts.
Well, to me, the glaring thing during my tenure as a beat writer in Washington for the Post was the silence that always came from his office. As far, you know, when issues come up, when stories come up, you would see Jay Gruden front and center. You'd see Doug Williams front and center. Now we're seeing with Ron Rivera. Ron Rivera is, what, 6 months into the job? I understand Ron Rivera in this moment is being praised as somebody who can change that culture, who can be a leader, and he's beloved by former players, current players, but it's really not his place. You know, I read Ron Rivera's statement where he said, you know, Dan Snyder brought me in here to change the culture. But how do you change the culture when the owner has existed here, has owned the team for this long, and these sort of instances and incidents have been brought up several times? And any beat writer for this team, once they got on the beat, they heard stories. Once, you know, there have been rumors for years. This is not, if you're in the DC market there, some of these things are not surprising. And I think as a female reporter, they're not surprising, because women deal with a lot of stuff. To do this job, I tweeted yesterday, to do this job, you deal with a lot and you ignore a lot, and there aren't a lot of safe spaces you can go to. So to see these 15 former employees, to see two female reporters express what they dealt with, it's not uncommon. And I think while Washington is getting hammered, as the team should, as the organization should, keep in mind, there are a lot of executives, a lot of coaches waking up this morning like, oof, glad that, you know, glad our local paper wasn't talking about us. This stuff is rampant. And it's high time that we stop pretending that this is just isolated incidents.
ESPN NFL reporter Kimberly Martin joining us here on Golic and Wingo. So while The team has hired an outside attorney to study the franchise's culture. You've been around the NFL for a while, Kimberly, working for a couple of teams and covering them nationally as well. Do you think this is something that the league needs to get involved with on an investigation?
You know, I had a conversation, you know, I was talking to a lot of people, you know, over the last week, because we all had heard, we all knew a story was dropping. And I talked to some people, and even last night, you know, what is it going to take to make the NFL, to really make the other owners say, you know, there just seems to be, you know, Dan Snyder seems like a great guy. However, why between the cheerleader story a couple years ago, between the name situation, between that and now this, like there's a lot of things that have that are coming under his watch. And at what point will owners say, you know what, we can't have that in the NFL. I think, you know, at this time, it's not enough, especially in this moment in time, it's not enough to just say like, oh, well, we don't run our shop like that, or, oh, that would never happen here. People have to start being supporters and allies of just good behavior. You know, you have to be agents of change in your respective environment. So if you're an owner, if you're the NFL, you shouldn't be surprised that another story has come out. But what are you going to do about it now?
We're talking to ESPN NFL reporter Kimberly Martin, Golic and Wingo. Jason fits in for Trey Wingo with Mike Golic, Mike Golic Jr. So, Kimberly, you've mentioned that this is sort of a league-wide problem. I know you also were around the Jets as an organization, as a beat writer. How would you compare the culture within that organization, for example, to the culture you experienced around the Washington football team?
So, you know, again, I say women go through a lot. I think any woman covering an NFL team, covering a sports team, working in corporate America, working for nonprofits, like, you deal with this stuff. For some, it may be one incident. For others, you deal with it constantly. I've had situations in my career where I've been worried about becoming a problem in the locker room because if you speak up. I've had situations where, you know, you feel like you're going to somebody who can at least alleviate what you're dealing with. And instead, you're sort of told, like, well, you know how guys are, you know, and especially when those things happen, you're conditioned almost to, you've got to develop sources, you've got to maintain relationships within the league, within organizations, and you feel like, sometimes you think like, okay, I'll just laugh that off, let me just ignore that so I can go about my business. But reading this Washington Post article, it really, honestly, it made me emotional because a lot of things that happen that you sort of push to the back of your mind just to kind of get to the actual job itself, a lot of that comes up. And I think on social media, you saw that from a lot of other women in the industry just sort of coming to terms with what they've had to brush aside, what they've had to speak up against, and what they've been silenced over.
And I think for a lot of people, seeing the dates attached to when all this was happening, it's a lot easier for people to compartmentalize a problem by saying, well, that was a long time ago and people have changed now. But you've heard from yourself, this article and others, that the dates on this are very recent. And I guess with that in mind, Kimberly, was anything about the reaction to this article, this incident, everything that was talked about and the accusations here, was there any part of the reaction to this from the public, social media, that surprised you?
I am so glad you asked me that, because I'll be honest, I was really ticked off by the tweets that tease, like, oh, there's a bombshell story, like, oh, watch out fans, like DC fans, like, you guys are in for, you know. And when the story finally dropped, so I, you know, I was reading it and I was like, I bet you there will be a lot of people who will say like, oh, well, I thought it was going to be worse. And, you know, I even had a couple people tweet at me like, oh, well, this, I need more evidence. And it's sort of like, okay, so 15 women, 15 former employees, that's not enough evidence. You know, I felt like this story, because people just wanted to talk about oh, we know this is going to come soon. It almost, you know, kind of trivialized this story when it finally ran, because the rumors on social media and all these other things, there's some people that felt like, oh, I was expecting way worse. And you know what? What was in that story was disgusting, and it shouldn't happen. And if you're not upset by it, and you don't have to be a fan of this team, you should be any person. And please, for men out there, do not say, well, you know, as a father of a daughter, you don't need to have a daughter. In this moment, you could just read what these women are saying. Trust that when people like me are talking about their experiences, these are real. These are not made up things. And know that that's not okay, and it needs to change. And we need to start listening to people and demanding that culture. Saying we're going to change the culture is not enough. We need to see action. And Dan Snyder should be front and center speaking on this, not just Ron Rivera.
Kimberly, as always, I mean, we really appreciate you coming on. We appreciate you giving us your experience, your insight on this. Thank you so much for joining us and for speaking the truth out on it. We really appreciate it.
No, thank you guys for having me.
Golic.
I tell you what, a great sports night last night. Yeah. No doubt about it.
And Wingo.
What a day, what a show, what a time.
We're joined by Liz Clark of the Washington Post, who wrote the article. And Liz, we really appreciate your time this morning. As you dove into this article as a whole, what really shook you the most as you put it together?
Sure. And thanks for having me. And a total shout out to my coworker, Will Hobson, who was tremendous on this topic. So it was a co-byline. In my 21 years at the Washington Post, I spent 8 years as a beat writer for this franchise. So I can't say a lot shocked me. I mean, some of it revolted me. So there are sort of two camps or two categories of the abuse these young women took. So sexual harassment, verbal abuse, unwanted overtures, texts. And then the other type is in the marketing department. This is echoes of a cheerleader scandal you might remember from 2 years ago, when the team was, you know, selling access to its cheerleaders to high rollers to close sales. So that sort of continues, in that their young female marketing executives were basically told to wear tight-fitting clothes so buyers have something to look at. There was an offer of a referral to someone who could do breast augmentation. So just things that on many, many levels do not indicate a healthy workplace, a good environment. And for people who are all about the product on the field and don't really see any of this as explosive, I'm sorry that you feel that way. But more importantly for you, I can draw a direct line from what we found to the product on the field, to the fact that, you know, the Redskins haven't won a playoff game in 15 years, and they've had one 10-win season in the past decade. And what has happened to the franchise on the field, in reputation, in revenue, in the 21 years of Dan Snyder's ownership?
Yeah, no doubt it hasn't been great as far as some of the winning percentages and playoff wins and all that, no doubt about it. People also, Liz, are looking to see, is there a direct line in all of this to Dan Snyder?
Sure. So none of these cases of sexual harassment on any level attach personally to Dan Snyder or Bruce Allen, who was a 10-year president, and he's now gone. But it very much reflects, it could not have happened in a workplace with a healthy culture. This is a culture that is not conducive to winning. In my 8 years, I covered four head coaches, untold executives. Things never change. There are sort of two constants there that I think do connect to the owner. Anybody in any workplace will tell you the culture is set at the top. And that culture, over the past 21 years, and we'll see if Ron Rivera can change this, is that all employees are replaceable, from office assistants to quarterbacks to head coaches. There is never a spirit of unity. We're all one. We're all pulling for the same thing. Another theme that never changes is a very good management tactic is abuse, is profanity and leaning hard, demanding now results on everybody. And that in turn trickles down to the people who report to you. So that is not good. And then in the sales department, you know, initially, the MO was we're going to sell these season tickets on nostalgia because the team has a great tradition and a great passionate fan base, at least 10, 15 years ago, that we all know. And now as that fan base is waning, it's the recent MO is we sell tickets and suites with short skirts and giving buyers something to look at through our female employees.
Talking to Liz Clark with us from the Washington Post again, one of the, as she pointed out, co-authors of this story on what is going on inside the building for the Washington football team. I'm curious at the beginning of all this, you mentioned you worked around the team for 8 years. You saw, I'm sure, a lot of things firsthand, but for this story in particular, what was the thing that set you down the road to talking to all these women? What was the first thing that kind of started you down the path to this story?
Yeah, so this goes back 2 years at least. You know, we had gotten some reports, both on this is just a hostile workplace, toxic workplace, some would say. The turnover, even the casual fan, your head is constantly on a swivel about who is coaching, playing quarterback, calling the plays, and there's somebody who worked in the building or worked at the team headquarters. I saw that on the staff. I mean, it's a staggering. I feel like the first main entry into this issue involved a foundation, the original Americans Foundation that Dan Snyder set up in 2014, with the stated goal of helping Native American communities. It also had a clear agenda of pushing back on critics of the name, longstanding critics of the name. So it was both kind of a propaganda organization and a charitable organization whose charity has stopped. Other outlets have reported that. So there was a case of sexual harassment there, and there were public records filed about it. I believe there was an EEOC complaint. And that led, as often happens, sorry to be so long-winded, to people saying, you know, you might want to talk to so-and-so. You might want to talk to this person. I know this person had a struggle. And with this team, there's a group of people who work in the front office in Ashburn, Virginia, and there's a different group that works at the stadium in marketing. So it's sort of two different workplaces, and it was a long, long process of getting young women who to feel comfortable talking to us on the terms that they did.
And what was, as you started talking to the women involved in this, sort of the consistent, whether it was emotion or response or you know, pervasive thought that maybe connected all of them in this, or was there even one?
Yeah, there was. I mean, on the sexual harassment, unwelcome advances, it's variations on a theme that are just gross and, you know, unacceptable. From, you know, you have a nice butt turnaround text that said, you know, we have a pool going on here. Are the breasts fake or real? I mean, this is a workplace. You know, propositioning. It's just. That's, you know, it would be gross in a bar, but this is an important NFL team. It's a $3.4 billion company, and I'm sorry, I failed to say what I think is a real, real problem and a real reflection of the ownership is is the failure to have a legitimately staffed, professionally run HR department in the building. There was no training about what is sexual harassment. There's no training about what a hostile workplace is. There's no protocol for here's how you file a complaint. There was certainly zero sense if you were a woman making $30,000 and this was your first job out of college, that you would be safe in reporting something there against maybe somebody who made six figures. So that is a spending priority. And it's also just dumb beyond words, you know, for a $3.4 billion company to not protect itself, you know, if you have no heart for offering employees a safe place to air grievances or seek help, you know, it's just basic business practice. I cannot believe there's not a high-functioning HR department in any comparable company in this day and age. But they lack that, yet spent profligately on free agents and all sorts of other things. The spending at that place under this owner is cheap beyond words on some things and wasteful beyond belief on other things.
We're speaking to Liz Clark from the Washington Post, who co-authored the article that was released yesterday about the Washington Football Club and 15 women that have alleged sexual misconduct through the process of it. Liz, I find it interesting in the article you mentioned that Dan Snyder was approached to respond to this in interviews and didn't. You also mentioned that the Post presented detailed allegations and findings to the club, which resulted in three employees leaving. When all of this information was presented to the football team before it actually hit the article, what was their reaction to what you guys were going to be publishing?
Yes, and I'm glad you've gone there because there are some affirmative things that I want to say about the club's response. So the initial response, and my coworker Will Hobson dealt with the team on this, but I understand, you know, everything about the story in our joint reporting process. The initial response was, we don't respond to hearsay. And then when Will came forward really with a memo outlining specific incidents, here's who was involved, here's what was said. In fact, we have texts that were sent. The team took it quite seriously. We certainly weren't informed, but as we were still reporting and trying to pull the story together, two scouts left. They were fired. A third very significant person resigned. And this is key in the story, the team announced they've hired a lawyer, a female lawyer, very prominent, accomplished lawyer, to lead a thorough review of their internal workplace issues and chart a new course of workplace issues going forward. Now, that's, you got to applaud that, but I think anybody who's followed this team might remember that play, because that's a play that came into play after the cheerleader scandal. The team announced they were doing a thorough internal review, and it came up again. The play was used again at the height of the name controversy in the past 5 weeks. They're doing an internal review. So I want to acknowledge the things, the steps they've taken, and that they did respond to us, and they seemingly responded internally. And I wish Coach Rivera the best. He has it outrageous amount on his shoulders. This team does not have a president. It does not have a GM. He is now tasked with changing a culture, not just picking a quarterback, but putting a product on the field that's credible. And somehow he's supposed to be designing a logo and helping pick a name at the same time. It's just bizarre.
Liz, we appreciate you joining us. We appreciate the extra insight and great work on the article. You guys can check it out on the Washington Post right now. Liz Clark. Liz, thank you so much for your time this morning.
Thank you all. Bye-bye.
Golic and Wingo.
It was all sort of one big giant Jell-O mold. It's very interesting where that went.
This whole thing has been a dumpster fire.
That.
Whoa, 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 whoa.
Bites.
This can't be happening.
What the hell?
Golic and Wingo is brought to you by Nature Valley. Whether you're taking on the trail or your terrace, your deck or your back, or the dock, Nature Valley Crunchy Granola Bars will help make you the most of your outdoor time, because a crunchy bar tastes like summer wherever you are.
It's Golic and Wingo on ESPN Radio. ESPN 2, Jason Fitz, Mike Golic, Mike Golic Jr.
What, was that not good enough reading for you, Jason? Because it wasn't good enough reading for me.
I feel like
the Nature Valley folks.
There's something about you and me being in the same room. It has not helped your reading this week. I feel like it's on me. It's my fault.
We're certainly going to get to your reading in a little bit.
Well, I'm used to that. That Bites means we take a look at some of the best moments over the course of the last week. And this one comes from the NBA hotline for anyone in the bubble to call and report if someone is not following protocol. It became known as the snitch line. Doc Rivers joked he was going to use it to his advantage.
I turn in LeBron yesterday. I'm turning in, Pop today. I'm trying to turn all these guys in. I think it's phenomenal. We're going to be the only team left when I'm done with this hotline thing.
That Bites.
That's taking it and running with it, huh?
We talked to Malika Andrews. They need a rebranding for the snitch line. Different name. The Health Heroes line. I tried it out yesterday.
Yep. You already went with for Bryson DeChambeau.
The Bam Cam's a great idea.
Whenever he's on the tee boxes, he had 2 400-yard drives yesterday. Go to the Bam Cam. I like that. So we need a new name for the hotline. And speaking of Bryson DeChambeau, he played a practice round with Tiger Woods on Wednesday at the Memorial. Said a lifelong dream, but during this presser, was he inadvertently meaning to taking a shot at Tiger Woods?
Back in the day, he was it. He was the golden star. He was the one everybody looked up to. And I can tell you that the junior golfers that I played with were all inspired by Tiger and how far he hit it and how he dominated tournaments. So there's a lot of kids that tried to be like him, tried to act like him, tried to do the things he was doing, which was great for junior golf. And, I was aware of it every single week he played, because I watched and just in complete awe of going, man, how is he doing this? Especially when you're that young and you know you can't hit it more than 250 or something like that. He's in at 330, back in the day. And even now, he's hitting it pretty long. I mean, there was a couple holes, he hit 320, 325, and I'm like, that's pretty good, for his age. It's amazing for his age.
That
for his age.
Bites.
That so just stinks.
We got two back in the days, which I think after the second back in the day, he might have realized I went back in the day twice here. Oh, but he still hits it long. And then a lot of junior references and kids references.
A lot of other juniors looked up to him. Yeah. I wasn't one of them because I was busy mathing.
And I don't think that he was meaning maybe to take a shot, but maybe he wasn't. When Tiger's hearing that, though, he's hearing wah, 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 wah back in the day. Wah, wah, wah back in the day,
Can you imagine you finished like the workout of your life in Orange Theory? Someone says, hey, not bad for your age.
Yeah.
Whew. Oh, I can't.
Oh, I'm not supposed to say that?
Wow.
I was going to say, I hear that every day.
Can we do something about him?
Bryson here clearly like, oh, he still hits it pretty far, but have you tried protein and eating food? Because I do that.
Have you seen how far I hit it?
Bam Cam all of a sudden became more sinister.
I love this Bam Cam.
Our producer, Evan, is campaigning for DeSham Cam, but it feels like
Bam Cam, short and sweet.
The problem is I'm conflicted because I nicknamed Bruce Koepka, a.k.a. Bruce Cape Cow, Bam Bam Cam, Bam Bam Koepka in all this one. And I feel like I'm stealing Bam Bam from him as a nickname.
I just tweeted out my fully original idea is now to have a special camera on. And I tagged Bryson, so don't worry. Every time he tees off, call it the Bam Cam. Wow. I'm stealing your idea because you can't get on Twitter.
Still locked out. Free Golic Jr. and Senior on Twitter. About 20,000 fans were in the grandstands to watch NASCAR's All-Star Race at Bristol Motor Speedway. Those in attendance saw firsthand when Michael McDowell wrecked Bubba Wallace. Those of us watching at home got to hear Bubba's reaction.
Just disrespect. And when you get hooked into the wall, my hair looks terrible. Sorry, Mom. When you get hooked right rear in the wall, it's I don't even need to see a replay. Look at that. Yeah, wow. One of the nicest guys in the garage. Can't wait for the God-fearing text that he's going to send me about preaching and praise and respect. What a joke he is.
Wow.
That Bites.
Wow.
Yo, NASCAR gets so spicy at times. Like,
they
man.
Do. And you get that immediate reaction, man. You get wrecked. You're out of the race. Man, they're over there interviewing that because that's what you want, man. You want that initial reaction.
We already had in NASCAR what we were wondering with all the social distancing, fisticuffs, dudes coming to blows and punching each other in the face. It's like, stay 6 feet apart.
If you do that, automatic test they have to have for that. And then, Jason, we'll take care of this.
Okay, good.
So we come at the end of every hour on the show is what's called the only hard out, where no matter what, we're off air. I mean, we can keep talking and nobody's going to hear. So you got to kind of hit the post on this one. And while Jason was trying to do that, he was trying to maybe say more than he wanted to say or forgot to say the actual name of the show. Either way, this is what it sounded like.
Coming up, why the biggest comparison to the Chiefs dynasty could be an NBA team. We'll tell you next. Yes, go, man.
Yeah. Cut that up. How quickly your laugh hit on that, Mike. I mean,
you know, and that's the hardest part about it. Like, I hear the laugh and they cut that up, and I realized that I had time. I still could have gotten the name
you
of
did.
The show.
What messed you up there? What were you trying to do?
I was trying to say coming up on, I'm supposed to say Golic and Wingo.
Right.
But instead, for some reason, I skipped to ESPN Radio. Technically, they want me to say Golic and Wingo on ESPN Radio. Like, that's the whole thing. So I realized I had skipped the name of the show, and then I tried to audible. I tried to hot route in the middle of the play.
Right.
It
hot
did not,
route, hot
it
route.
It did not work.
Well,
it did not work.
You only have to say that name 11 more days.
Golic and Wingo.
Let's not expect too much. There's only one person out there that's expecting way too much out of this guy too early. We know who that is. It's his father.
ESPN reporter Tom Rinaldi joins us now. Tom, thank you so much for your time. Hope you and yours are safe first and foremost. So give me a sense, now that you've been around, what it looks like with Tiger without the roar, of how it feels to be in that presence and not have the same crowd.
Good morning, guys. You know, I've been walking rounds with Tiger Woods for almost the better part of 20 years to date myself. And to tell you that yesterday was a round unlike any that certainly I'd seen, doesn't begin to cover it. How about the fact that when he was introduced, they still make the announcement now on the tee, Tiger Woods, there's not a single clap, not a single acknowledgement from anybody. After he made the opening birdie, he was walking to the second tee box, and a man over the fence from his backyard looked at Tiger and said, "Great birdie." And Tiger looked right at him and said, "Thank you." Almost as if they were having a conversation. It was just very, very strange. He ended the day really well with a 14-foot birdie putt. You can only imagine in the amphitheater here at Muirfield Village what that would have been like. And instead, you could hear the ball fall into the hole. It was remarkable.
It really is amazing. And again, it's a tournament he has won five times. So how about the air of just the tournament now? We're kind of getting used to this now, Tom, quite honestly. No fans being around. I know they wanted to start putting some in at this tournament, but I think they're going to wait a little further. Do the players, I would imagine at this point, feel pretty comfortable with this, getting into this new routine?
I think so, Mike. I think you're right. This was supposed to be the first tournament with fans permitted to come back, but with the spikes and the change in what's happening with COVID around the country and here in Ohio, they decided no fans, no pro-am, and the PGA Tour said no fans for the rest of this season. But Tiger, interestingly, was asked about how he felt without fans. And I thought the words that he used were pretty striking, where he said he felt the same eagerness, edginess, anxiousness that he always feels. And I think players have noticed how unusual this is, but they're acclimating to it pretty quickly. Logistically, things are a bit easier. But let's face facts, guys. And you know, Mike, that there is a juice that comes from making a great play and having the crowd react. And having no reaction, there's a void there. And having to work through that, it's interesting.
And, Tom, there's a juice that comes with your first foray back into this after the kind of layoff that Tiger's had. And so I'm curious, and my dad brought this up earlier, how we expect him to fare with the quick turnaround today, or teeing off earlier in the day today after teeing off
in like 3 minutes
yesterday. Yeah, I could say very soon on here. So what that reaction might be like for someone like Tiger, who's dealing with the physical limitations at times that he has.
I think that's a great point, Junior. It really is. I'll tell you two things that help him with that tight turnaround. One certainly is warm and humid weather. If we begin to talk about tight turnarounds and we're talking about Augusta National and the Masters in November when it could be cool and damp, et cetera, that would be a completely different situation. But the warm and humid conditions help him, number one. Number two, he was asked about it directly, and he said he didn't foresee having any issues. You know, Tiger is almost a lifelong insomniac. He gets up very, very early, virtually every day. And believe me, I'm sure he was up very, very early. He was out here early, went through sort of an additional round of chipping and putting, even beyond his typical warm-up, about to go off presently, off 10-T right now, alongside Koepka and Rory. What a grouping that is, with no fans following them.
Well, and that's a great, that leads me, Tom, to the next thought. When you've got that grouping together, what's their conversation been like while they're playing as they go through this process?
It's not only the conversation fits, it's the fact that you can so clearly hear it. You can hear everything that they say to one another. And so you can hear, nice putt, hey, good shot, well done. So essentially the greatest support that the players have comes from one another in that pairing. And you heard it. You heard some of the conversations about technology in terms of the clubs that they were using, et cetera, the shafts. It's interesting just as you catch these stolen moments between them. I said yesterday, guys, Rory McIlroy is probably the social chairman of that threesome. But it's really interesting to be able to hear the talk between them, even to hear the clubs clang together in Joe LaCava's bag as he walks up a fairway. I know it's been going on here. This is the sixth event back, but it's still pretty striking, certainly from my vantage point.
Tom Rinaldi joining us at the Memorial Tournament here on Golic and Wingo, a tournament that Tiger has won five times. But also the other thing, and this is kind of how we've been comparing it, Tom. Back in the day when Sosa and McGuire were having their home run chase, you'd break into their at-bats. Other players would watch them doing batting practice to hit bombs. And I know you're following Tiger around, but I'm wondering if on the practice tee, you're seeing Bryson DeChambeau hit a driver. We've had other golfers say at the driving range at these tournaments, we would stand around and watch. And if you've seen him hit a driver, he had two over 400 yesterday. Just how it sounds when a guy is just knocking the snot out of a ball like that.
So Tiger played alongside Bryson early Wednesday morning. They played nine holes together. And remember, Tiger has very good rapport with so many of the players, even just recently, based on his presidency his captaincy of the President's Cup, rather. But Bryson has raised eyebrows, guys, from the very beginning. The mad scientist, the physicist, the guy who has all the same length clubs, the guy whose driver, Mike, has 3 degrees of loft. Think about trying to hit a golf ball with a 3 degree loft face. And yet, he's flying, like you said, two drives in excess of 400. Yet, when you look at listen, he's got great results. He's hitting all of his clubs very, very far. But this particular layout will really challenge him. This is by far the most difficult track that these guys have faced. It looks nothing like it did even a week ago at the workday. And with a wind that was up, it was very challenging yesterday afternoon. We'll see how Bryson does here. I mean, his results have backed up his approach, but this will be a different kind of challenge.
Bryson kind of gave Tiger the old man treatment yesterday when he was talking about him, asking a comment, a lot of back in the days, a lot of the junior golfers on that one. I'm wondering, Tom, you think there's any part of Tiger that kind of wants to remind him who the big fish on the tour is?
So that's a great point, Junior. You're referring to the comment that Bryson made on Wednesday when he referred to Tiger hitting a lengthy drive during their practice round. He said that was good for his age. Yeah. Holy cow. At the death knell for anyone that's a little bit older. And so in a great moment, you talk about the conversation between the guys. On 10, Tiger took out driver, up Koepka, hit a 3-wood, but Tiger was 50 yards in front of anybody else on perfect drive on 10 fairway. And some of the chatter, you can believe it, going to 11 tee box was, hey, not bad for the old man. Not bad for his age. That kind of thing. So believe me, that comment has certainly gotten some legs.
Tom, we appreciate you coming on and hanging out with us. We appreciate the insight, my friend. Most importantly, stay safe. Thanks so much for joining us.
To all three of you guys, please, stay safe and the same. Great to hear you, Fitzy.
This has been the Best of Golic and Wingo podcast. You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or just ask your smart speaker to play Golic and Wingo. Plus, you can check the guys out live weekday mornings from 6 to 10 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on ESPN News.